When I was thinking about what to talk about this weekend, I started to think of my own life as a woman and nutrition and health. And, you know, I travel around Alberta and other provinces, and I've met many of you that way in the past. And I'm always talking about your typical diet and lifestyle and what to do for protein and calcium and all the above. And we teach about total health as well. Mentally, physically, spiritually. And as a Christian, that is most important, isn't it? Having that balance and being able to put it together and in the right focus. And so as a woman, I many times, as a mother, as a wife, as a daughter, as a sister, as a grandmother, you know, we tend to have these big hearts that kind of go out and care for everybody else around us, leaving us the very last. And so I was impressed from the first time I was asked to speak to share with you what it means to have balance when it comes to health and nutrition in our lives. As a woman, being able to meet our needs physically, mentally, spiritually. And so that's what I want to share with you this morning. And so I begin with life is a balancing act. Do you ever feel that way? I think it is described perfectly. When you think of that tight wire, you know, that tightrope that you're walking on every day, being careful of your next move. There was a man, his name was Stan Zundel. And quite an amazing story, actually. He was 56 years old, and he was the vice president of one of the world's largest banks. And you can imagine the stress that he was under in a position like that. And from the outward appearance, you would look at him, and it would look like he had it all together. Kind of like last night, what was shared in the talk. How when you see a speaker up here, or you see certain people put on a platform, you think, wow, they've got it all together. You know, things are happening for them. Well, that's how it was with Stan. Things looked like it was happening for him. He had good, you know, he had good money coming in. He had an excellent position in the company. What more could this man ask for? He had a family and so forth. But, you know, the professional and business pressures that came with his job as vice president began to escalate and grow and just grow and grow. And so one day he realized what was happening in his life. But unfortunately, it was almost too late. By the time he discovered it, he had to pay a great price for his success. With increasing tension now and worry, he was now diagnosed with having ulcers, followed by now heart disease, arthritis, and suddenly cancer. His physicians predicted that within 1 year, he would be a complete invalid because of his arthritis. It now hit his spine, and so he had a severe arthritic spine condition. And then when he saw his cancer specialist, he was told that the malignant cells are multiplying in your bloodstream, and the probability is that they will attack some vital organ, producing a killer tumor within 2 years. Now he went into deep depression as well, and he realized his life was coming to an end. What do you think was his most concern in his mind at this point? His quote is, "I yearn for the lost joys of family life." Is that what you would think about as well? Especially, you know, you have children, grandchildren, family. He's leaving that all behind. But he's now thinking not just the fact that his life is going to end and he's not going to be able to enjoy that or continue enjoying that. He's looking back at all the years that he lost with his family because of the pressures and the work and everything he was doing to reach that great height in his career. We can have everything, but without health, we lose the ability to enjoy the best and the most important things in life. Stan Zundel, his story does not end there. Fortunately, there's a good ending to his life. Instead, he decided he was going to set a goal, and this goal was to be to gain back his health. and sufficient health, and he decided he was going to get good enough health that he wanted to climb the mountains. And so he says, I was sure that if I could conquer the mountains, I could then conquer myself. For his corrective therapies, otherwise in addition to his chemotherapy that he went through for his cancer, he decided that maybe he would change his lifestyle now and see what kind of impact that would have. And so he began to exercise, and he started to have positive thinking. You know, positive thinking plays a huge role in our lives, in our health. And I do a talk now called Attitude of Gratitude. And you know all the health laws we lay out, sunshine and rest, and everyone's heard of those, right? Fresh air, trust in God. I now add an attitude of gratitude because it just fits. It has to fit. It's part of the puzzle. And so Stan took this up with positive thinking. He planned and was going to climb the mountains. He continued with proper nutrition, emotional serenity, mental balance, and trust in God. Gradually, with great difficulty, Zundel began to change his way of life. And slowly, his health and his strength began to come back. It began to increase and increase, and he was able to enjoy his mountain climbing experience. And as he began to enjoy the climbing of the mountains, his health only continued to increase from there. He reports, amazingly, the mountains started me growing again. He climbed the Matterhorn in Switzerland, which is a grueling test of human endurance, which he repeated many times afterwards. He has a documentary film that's out, and he shares his amazing recovery, and he reported another benefit of it as well, and that was his healthy lifestyle choice. And he states that my family and associates soon noticed that my quick temper had disappeared and my chip on my shoulder had long since fallen to the ground. So, do you believe that changing your lifestyle, your diet, can change your character and your personality of who you are? It definitely did for Stan. And you know, this morning I appreciated the worship time that we had as well, and the talk and the pictures that we saw of nature and how nature brings us close to God. Have you experienced that? I was born and raised in Calgary, a big city, and through the years I saw it grow and grow, and I hit a point that one day I just knew I had to get out of the city. I was just longing to go to the country, to be closer to God. And after 5 years of struggling to do that, it worked. And one thing that stands out in my mind the most was my first Sabbath on our acreage. And I remember having my worship and praying and saying, "Thank you, Lord." I'd sit in my living room and look out my big window, and I'd say, "Is this a vacation or is this for real? You know, is this going to stay? Please don't take this away, Lord." And I thought, it can't get any better than this. And we went to sit and have our breakfast that Sabbath morning, and all of a sudden we looked up and there was a moose standing right on the other side of our kitchen deck there. And so we all, "Wow, a moose!" And we all went running out there and looked, and this moose just kind of looked at us and then kind of went running a bit and stopped, looked again. And so we all kind of went out the back door to see where she was heading, and she came right over to our horse trough and stood there and waited us to come out and turn on our water for her to drink. And we stood there with a barbed wire fence between her drinking and us, and I thought, I don't know, people probably think we're absolutely crazy to be doing this. But I just remember standing there and going, "God, you are so awesome. I cannot ask for a greater blessing this morning." And you know, this moose would do it every morning, same time. She'd come, she'd stand, she'd wait, we'd go out, we'd turn on the water. And so eventually we called her Molly the Moose. And we'd go out and we'd say, "Hey, good morning, Molly." And after 2 weeks, you know what came out of the bush with her? Her baby. She trusted us enough to bring her baby. And they both came and they drink water. And I should have put a picture on the screen to show you. We've taken lots of pictures. And just beautiful. There's nothing better than getting in nature. And so Stan knew that getting into those mountains, he could experience God. And so we need to go where we can go to experience the Lord. And so this is Stan here as well. His documentary is called I Climb to Live, an excellent documentary. So with few lifestyle changes, this amazing man lived years beyond what his physicians had predicted and enjoyed a quality of life he never thought would be possible. But he returned to what we call the essentials. Otherwise, he was what? Transformed, right? There is another author here, Dr. Edward Hallowell, and he's written a book that's a really interesting title. It's called Crazy Busy, Overstretched, Overbooked, and About to Snap. When I read this title, I thought, oh, he wrote about me. And no one even, you know, he didn't even interview me. You know, I'm sure you feel a little like this at times, don't you? Especially when you're spread out, giving of yourself every day. You know, it's hard to get up and take that time to have your worship and have your quiet time. I have four boys, and, you know, you get up early and you're packing a lunch to send one off to college, and I'm helping to feed the others, and we homeschool, and you've got piano practice going, and you've got this and this and this, and by the end of the day, it's 10 o'clock, and you're ready to crash, and you go, wow, did I even see the day? Never mind, take some quiet time for ourselves. Our day-to-day responsibilities, they can become overwhelming. They can become stressful, and they can make you anxious. Because many times, it's because we are unable to accomplish everything that we're wanting to or what's required of you. Most of us struggle with a balance in our careers, our family, and our social obligations. And sometimes that which brings the greatest rewards in our life, such as our physical, spiritual, and relational wellness, is being squeezed out. In spite of the rush pace of our existence, you can still choose to have a balanced life. And as we begin to work towards this balanced life, we can start by processing what our lifestyles look like and make a conscious decision about our future. We can decide what we can maybe leave out and what is not essential and what changes then we can make. This is a good beginning, and there is where we have hope. We can choose how to live, and then realize that you are the architect of your life. So let's look at a lifestyle which is essential for a balanced life. Life, I say, is a balancing act. As we walk our daily tightropes, we try to balance the various responsibility and our priorities, and it's not always easy. I'm sure you've heard of this man, this famous Jean-Francois Gravelet, better known as the Great Blondin, was the first man across the huge gorge of Niagara Falls on a tightrope. Can you imagine? This amazing man, he seemed to have absolutely perfect balance. On June 30, 1859, he successfully crossed the falls on a 3-inch rope that stretched from the American side to the Canadian, which was a span of 1,100 feet. Now, he spent 20 minutes crossing this river and about 25,000 onlookers watching him breathlessly. Halfway across this river, he decides he's going to sit down, and he sits down calmly. He stretches out his back, and he rests the balancing pole across his chest before rising to his feet to resume his crossing. When he nears now the Canadian shore, he decides he's going to do a backward somersault onto the land. He continued to do other crossings in the future as well, some of them absolutely bizarre. Sometimes he walked on stilts. Sometimes he was crossing with a bicycle. Once he even pushed a wheelbarrow that had a small stove made of sheet iron across. And during this trip across, he then proceeded to light his stove with fire, and he cooked an omelet on it, and then he took it and lowered it to the boat, the tour boat that was going below, called the Maid of the Mist, and let the passengers enjoy it. Can you imagine? So how do tightrope walkers do it? Someone asked the famous tightrope walker, what was the secret of walking the tightrope? Do you want to know? That same secret is what you can take and use in your life to cross that tightrope. The secret is looking ahead at where you are going. Because you tend to go where your eyes go. That's the way it is in life. So keep your eyes fixed on the goal. So these were all amazing feats. But being a woman, a man, a boy, a girl, able to perform the high wire act of discovering equilibrium of mental, spiritual, physical, relational health is in a balanced life is even greater. It's even more valuable, isn't it? For many, it's difficult, but let me tell you, it's worth it. This is the balancing act which really counts. This is what life is all about. And so I'm going to look with you now of some of the things that we tend to forget about or admit or ignore when we are all caught up in our fast-paced, frenzy lifestyle. Sleep. Do you know anyone who's just plainly tired out? Studies indicate that 80% of the American population is chronically sleep-deprived, and up to 25% of children suffer from sleep problems. Is our loss of sleep affecting quality of life and relationships? Definitely. When you're tired, are you cheerful? No. You know, there's the Bible text that tells us not to go to bed mad or angry, to solve all your quarrels before going to sleep. Don't do it when you're really tired and you're on your pillow ready to fall asleep, because sometimes harsh words come out even more at that point, right? Take care of it before you hit that pillow. It affects our relationships. It affects our lives. How does loss of sleep affect our hormones? Did you know that rats deprived of sleep fall ill from bacterial pathogens? They fail to maintain body heat, and they will die within 3 weeks if they don't get proper rest. That's a rat. How do you think it affects our bodies as humans? Do we want to learn how to rest from our stresses? That's a different form of rest, isn't it? Many times that's what keeps us from a good night's rest, is all the stuff that's going through our minds at night and what we're dealing with. But Jesus says, come apart and rest a while. You know, one of my talks as well that I enjoy doing is talking about when Jesus calms the sea and how they were in that boat and the waters were raging around them. And you can picture your own life. You're in this boat and life is raging around you. And sometimes you go, God, where are you? Here I am suffering this, and why are you not helping me through this? But just like in the boat, he was there, wasn't he? And what did he do? He woke up and he says, why are you worried? Peace, be still. And suddenly the waters were calm. And you know, Jesus is in that boat with you always. Even when you're going through the rough waters, he never leaves you. We just have to trust and believe he will take care of it. He can calm the roaring seas. So we need to come apart, as we are told, rest a while, because if we don't come apart, we might fall apart. So take some mini half days or some full vacations maybe to regain a balanced living. Eating. I had someone look at this picture and say, wow. Out of all the slides you showed, that was the best one. It looks good. Oh, boy. This isn't supposed to look good. The former Surgeon General of the U.S., Everett Koop, stated that 2/3 of the diseases of Americans are related to their diet. Can you imagine if you could wipe out 2/3 of the diseases in our country today? Just by changing diet, Isn't that amazing? But I always say there's nothing closer to the heart than your refrigerator. And when you start to mess with it, you're in trouble. And so, again, we know that a Canadian study based on data from 54 countries found that 35% of all heart attacks globally are caused by diets due to, again, a lot of fast foods, a lot of fried foods, salty snacks, meat, and so forth. In other words, a lot of junk food, right? Fast junk food. So one should aim for approximately 20% of their calorie intake of fat. So if you're basing on a 2,000 calories diet per day, no more than 44 grams of fat should be consumed per day. And we want it to be good fat, good essential fat. You've heard of how fat can nourish the brain. That is your good essential omega fats. And so we want that to be as much of this as possible. But I have this in here just to show you how quickly the fat can add up of a lot of these fast foods. And so here we have our hot fudge sundae, our Big Mac, and so forth. And liquid oils especially can add up. Cheese, 1 ounce of cheese is 7 to 9 grams. Do you know how big 1 ounce of cheese is? It's about a centimeter cube. How many cubes do you think is on a piece of pizza? All right, I'll move on. I don't mean to discourage you. But you can compare it to the whole foods, right? Plant-based foods, foods that's growing. And can you overeat this and get too much fat? No. God provided for us good, wholesome food that you don't have to go hungry. You can eat until your heart's content, get the nutrition, and not have to deal with worrying about how many grams of fat. You know, I'm a person that doesn't like to sit. I mean, as a nutritionist, one of our major things we try to focus on sometimes is how many grams of this and what percent fat is that and how many calories is this. I hate that, honestly. It is time-consuming, it's exhausting, it's discouraging. And I say instead, if you can focus on whole foods as growing, you don't have to count all that stuff. God's already figured it out for us, hasn't he? When we have to figure it out is when we start doing a bunch of things with the food. And so if we can go back to the plain and simple diet, we can remove that worry and stress. I just wanted to show you this when it comes to sugar. Sugars can be really addictive as well. And how it kills off our immune system. And so here we can have, this is number of bacteria destroyed with each white blood cell in your body. So here we have 0 teaspoons of sugar. So if you consume no sugar, each white blood cell is able to destroy 14 bacteria. Now, if you were to eat 6 teaspoons of sugar, what happens is it immobilizes or paralyzes your white blood cells, and now they're only able to destroy 14. 12 teaspoons, they're only able to destroy 5.5. 18, you're down to 2. And 24, they're only able to destroy 1 bacteria. Now the question, how many teaspoons do you think the average person consumes in a day? The average, I'm not even going overboard here, just the average. Any guess? 30, 35 teaspoons a day. So are we running on any immune system? We have no immune system left. And we wonder why the statistics I share that 2/3 of all diseases can be diet changed. This is why. Because we can pick up anything if we have no immune system. The immune system is our defense. It's soldiers. This is what's fighting for us. So I like to lay it out this way because it really puts things into perspective. So going back, sorry, before I rush on ahead. If another study that was done, that if we were to eat adequate nutrient-filled vegetables, it showed a 40% less mental decline than those who had few or no vegetables. We know that this fat and the sugar and the salty foods have a direct link on our brain, on our memory, on our focus, on our intelligence level. And my question always is, how is it that God speaks to you? It's through our minds, isn't it? And so if we don't have a clear mind, We can't hear him speak. And so this should be, in itself, one of those goals that we're looking forward and focusing on, is a clear mind so we can hear God speak to us. Those eating lots of green leafy vegetables especially showed remarkable results in maintaining healthy brain function, which would be expected of people 5 years younger. So what is this message for a balanced diet? Eat your veggies and your fruits, for they'll prolong your life, and you will go to the doctor's office less often. And in the end, you will have a better quality of life. I believe it's a balancing act to get in your exercise. You know, as you can picture your schedule, it is just packed, and people say to me, I am running from early morning to late at night. How am I supposed to now fit in exercise? Well, I'm not going to go too much into this because I hope that you attend this afternoon where you will learn the benefits of exercise and come with your walking shoes because we're going to do a 1 mile walk test. And you'll be able to see what fitness level you're at and how to grow from there. And I have other little fun gadgets to try out, your BMI, your body mass index, your body fat, which I'm sure will be a huge lineup and demand for. And always kind of the most, we'll put it in a quiet corner so no one sees. And grip strength testing, which is really interesting as well. So some of these tests we don't always do that we can have fun with this afternoon. But 30 minutes of walking a day will cut your risk of a heart attack by 50%. It'll decrease cancer risk, and it'll dramatically reduce anger, fatigue, and tension. Do we need it? We need it for balance, don't we? Exercise in the physical, mental, and spiritual dimension spells the difference between dreaming of doing something great and actually doing something great. Walking in all cases where it is possible is the best remedy for diseased bodies because in this exercise, all the organs of the body are brought into use. There is no exercise that can take the place of walking. Walking is the ultimate exercise. It's using all your various muscles as you swing your arm and walk your legs. And you're in a posture that your lungs can fully fill with oxygen in and out. It's inexpensive, and it's right out your door. We're told more people die for want of exercise than through over-fatigue, for very many more rust out than wear out. Those who accustom themselves to proper exercise in the open air will generally have a good and vigorous circulation. Drink enough water. Did you know that drinking adequate pure water can improve your thinking? For your brain is a high percentage of water. I've been always taught about 75% water your brain is, but I've read in different books it can be anything from 70 to 90%, different authors say. But still, you can see the point. Two-thirds of it is based on water. It's huge. And so, if thirsty begins to shrivel up like a plum turning to a prune, your brain, as it becomes thirsty, it begins to shrivel up like a prune and progressively will lose its functions. One of the very last indicators of dehydration of the body is dry mouth. You know, a lot of times people wait for that. I'm thirsty. Oh, I better have a drink. When you feel thirsty, you're already dehydrated. Don't wait for that thirst mechanism. By the time the dry mouth becomes an indicator of water shortage, many delicate functions of the body have been shut down and prepared for deletion. And we have learned now as well, studies have been showing that juvenile diabetes could be more prominent because the insulin-producing cells of the pancreas are sacrificed as a result of persistent dehydration. Do babies need water? Definitely. They're human. Any human needs water. We're composed of water. Whether you're a baby or you're, you know, in your later years, we're still composed of water. In the elderly, the thirst mechanism is gradually lost. Why? Because through our years, we've waited to be thirsty to drink, and eventually your body stops telling you because you're just not recognizing it. And so we need to drink constantly some water, sipping it throughout the day. Now, there's often a common mistake that happens, and that's because people think they can use other liquids to substitute for water. And although these beverages contain water, they also contain dehydrating substances such as caffeine. And these substances can actually rid the body of water that they are dissolved, the water they are dissolved in, plus additional water of the body, the body's reserve. And so, you know, every cup of coffee you drink, depending on the type of coffee you're drinking, can actually rob your body of up to 10 cups of water. Can you believe that? So it could be 3 to 10 cups of water for every cup of coffee you drink, depending on the type of coffee you are drinking. And so, again, dehydration becomes an issue. So drinking 6 to 8 glasses of pure water and not soda pop is vital in preventing heart attacks. It'll aid in kidney function. It'll even beautify your skin. And it'll help to cleanse the inward body. Warm to hot water is especially helpful at the beginning of your day. I like to squeeze lemon juice into that. It's a great idea. By putting 1 to 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice into 8 to 10 ounces of water and drinking that at least a good half hour before your breakfast will make your stomach create hydrochloric acid to help you in your digestion through the whole day. So if you're suffering bloating and, you know, indigestion and gas and all these things, try the lemon water and drink that about a half hour before breakfast and see how that makes you feel. It will give a mental wake-up call and aid to your digestion. By drinking water between your meals, it prepares your system for the meal to come. Water drinking is a valuable part of our planned daily lifestyle, and it is included in balanced living. Now, our brains, we've talked a little bit about it so far with the fat and the sugars and the water and so forth. And so basically, our brains are affected for good or bad by also the pace of our life, by the bombardment of media, by our choices to exercise or not, even by the food we eat. How can I think clearly or make vital decisions or tough decisions on basis of fact and not feeling or fancy? How can I use my brain to make the tough decisions and not just take the path of least resistance? Am I maintaining that keen mental edge, which is the key to successful decision-making, that keeps my brain sharp and active? So these are all questions for us to focus on as we improve balanced life. If you really want to make good decisions and think clearly and have a keen mental edge, then we need to follow these rules of drinking water, exercise, sufficient sleep, as we mentioned, and eat your fruits and veggies, right? Some of you might have heard the story of Phineas Gage. It's quite an amazing story, really, an eye-opener. First, to tell you a little bit about him, he was a construction foreman of a railroad crew. He was a faithful husband and father. He was only 25 years old, but he was well-liked by his fellow workers. He was a very religious man. He attended church regularly. And he had an important job. And this job, his current job, was to lay railway tracking through a mountainous region. But then came September 13, 1848. The routine was well-established. He was used to it. First of all, he would drill a long hole into the rock and then partially fill it with explosive powder, cover the powder with the sand, and then a tamping bar was used to pound down on the sand, consolidating that charge. And a fuse was then lit to detonate the explosion. But then the fateful day of September 13, everything was going as planned. Like we said, he did it over and over. The long hollow hole was drilled, an explosive charge was carefully set in the hole, but then a glitch developed. Whether Phinehas was distracted or his assistant perhaps failed to cover the charge with sand, we're not sure. But either way, Phinehas Gage began to tamp directly over this powder, and the rod generated a spark as it glanced a stone inside the hole, and the uncovered powder ignited and sent off a powerful explosion. And it was so powerful, in fact, that this 13-pound tamping iron, which was 1 inch thick and 3 feet long, entered under his cheekbone, behind his eye, and out through his brain, and landing yards behind him. What do you think would have happened to Phinehas at that point? Dead. You'd assume that was the end of his life, wouldn't you? But you know what was so amazing? That research has been based on this accident. This Phinehas Gage, he actually acted normal. He obtained complete consciousness. He was able to talk and even walk with a bit of assistance from his coworkers. He was able to think. He was intelligent. His memory was good. Isn't that amazing? But there was a problem. What could be the problem? Well, slowly we saw his moral decline became immediately evident. He became very emotional and would become angry easily. He lost interest in spiritual things and stopped going to church. He lost respect for social customs and became totally irresponsible. He lost his job, being unable to fulfill his responsibilities. And finally, he just left his wife, his family, and he joined the circus. Very sad story, isn't it? So why? Why did it make a big difference? What it cost him was his life, was a frontal lobotomy. It affected his personality, his moral standards, his commitments to his family, church, and loved ones. And later he died, 13 years later. He died of a broken heart, sad, no hope, angry man. His skull and tamping iron, you can even go and see at Harvard University. It's on display there still. Phinehas lost an important area of what we know as the left and right regions of the frontal lobe of his brain. So if you look at the brain, the frontal lobe is right here in front, behind your forehead. And then, of course, the other portions of the brain. But it's the frontal lobe where that tamping bar had exited. This frontal lobe we know is the largest lobe of the brain. And here is where your seat of judgment, reasoning, intellect, and will reside. Otherwise, who you are, what makes you who you are, is all right here in the frontal lobe of your brain. It is the control center of your entire being, and it's referred to by scientists as the crown of the brain. This verse, Revelation 22:4, has a total different meaning when you take in the thought of the frontal lobe of the brain that I just spoke of. And they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. Your character resides in the frontal lobe behind your forehead. And we want a character like Christ's character, don't we? And so here we are. They shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. So Christ's character represented through our character. So God's character, otherwise his name, is reproduced into our character, which is exemplified by the frontal lobe, which is just behind our forehead. Phinehas Gage lost only part of his frontal lobe. Lifestyle choices, though, that we make can affect our entire frontal lobe. Phinehas' loss was due to an accident, and in most situations, our loss is due to the choices we make. So these choices I'm talking about today actually make you who you are. It will change your frontal lobe. It'll either heal it or it'll destroy it. And so if we want a character of Christ, we need to put things back into perspective. It is possible for us to change from being governed by the lower brain, where our feelings are and instincts predominate, to being governed by our higher brain, which is the seat of the power of choice and reason, the frontal lobe of our brain. A balanced, healthy brain with the frontal lobe in charge can switch off negative thinking to positive thoughts. And so they are health producing. We have the ability to choose and be intentional about our health, family, and a balanced lifestyle, and even spiritual decisions. The frontal lobe of the brain can help you be a good choice maker and a bad habit breaker. As you strengthen that frontal lobe of the brain, it becomes easier and easier. And the stronger it becomes, it helps you in fighting the battle. You just have to work at it for those first few weeks, and then you'll see the difference. Those who participate in wellness strategies find that with God's help, they can sense a transformation in their thought life that actually enhances the daily balanced life. Did you know that much illness is because of negative thinking, and that positive thinking people have healthier bodies? So, again, we need to make a choice. So can I turn the switch on negative thinking? And can I be a good choice maker and a bad habit breaker? And yes, we can, right? So what about time now? The balancing act to prioritize our time, to put first things first. Time spent with family, it is a choice. It needs to be planned, and it'll add zest to life when the family does fun things together. For example, you know, I have a friend this weekend. He kidnapped his wife for the weekend, and she didn't know where she was going. And they're celebrating their 10th anniversary, and she was saying to me, I don't know if I trust him. I don't even know what I should pack. She says, I just keep hoping it's someplace warm. And jokingly, I knew where she was going, but I was teasing her that he was probably taking her winter camping. And he loves to skidoo in the mountains, and she doesn't, but I told her that she might be skidooing and camping. And anyways, he took her to Victoria, and so they're enjoying a beautiful weekend there. And, you know, this is fun, family time. We need to make time for it. And you know, who likes to be in the center of our, you know, of what we try to do with our families and try to have a relationship? There's always this interference, isn't there? Satan likes to just meddle his way in, and one of the best ways to do that is to make us too busy for our own families. And, you know, I've struggled with this over the years. You know, even just presenting health workshops, I could be at a point I'd be gone every weekend if I allowed it. And so I need to, you know, say I can't be gone every weekend. I need to be home with my family too. And I notice a difference when I'm not there. They miss me and I miss them. And so we need to be with our family and make that time, because no one's going to do it for you. We have to do it ourselves, don't we? And so, again, planning time together, whether it be a family vacation, whatever it takes to make good memories. Sometimes it's just going out and sitting by a fire pit and talking around a campfire. Sometimes it's going out to a restaurant to eat. There's different ways of doing it, but think about what will create memories. 1,500 school children were asked what they thought makes a happy family, and the most frequently given answer was doing things together. Strong families are planning their schedules so they can eat together once or twice a day. You know, most families don't. Everyone eats on the run. And so when we're talking about nutrition and diet, one of the good ways to implement that is sit as a family and eat a well-balanced meal together. Make it a joyful experience. It assures their children more nutritious food. It'll lower crime rate even. Can you believe that? Sitting and eating meals together as a family has proven to lower crime rates and increase academic success. Progressive families are avoiding the cultural traps that are snaring their acquaintances and going against the current to make their family life vital and attractive. Family time for the average working couple has shrunk by 22 hours a week since 1970. This research tells us that families aren't eating together as much as they did a few years ago. In fact, it's declined 33% in the last 30 years. And when families do eat together, the children and teens are made more socially adjusted and not only get better grades in school, but again, they eat healthier. Hedrick Smith, in a show on the public broadcasting system, talks about the problems in the new economy where making a living has gotten out of sync with making a family and having a life. One of the problems is that family time for the average working couple, as we said, has shrunk 22 hours a week. So it is a reflection on today's priorities that over the last 20 years in one Western country, family vacations have decreased as well by 28%, and outdoor family nature activities have dropped by 50%. And there is less communication between parent and child. Are these traps that are happening in your family today? So just going for that walk, that exercise, how can you fit it into your schedule? You can go for a nice walk in the nature with your family. Make it a family event. It doesn't have to be just yourself as a, something that you dread doing. Make it joyful. A University of Michigan study indicates that children are becoming increasingly disconnected from their parents and from their faith community. There are children who feel they do not belong, and are not appreciated. Now, what if you're single? How do you find a fulfilled life? Well, here's some guidelines that I've put together that hopefully can be helpful as well. Take time to have a growing spiritual experience and a dynamic prayer connection with the Father God of the universe. And this is for all of us, really, isn't it? 2, take time to let your love shine through others. Take time to learn about healthy lifestyle, healthy cooking, and follow health rules. Keep physically active by following a daily exercise program, either alone, but with friends. Have a buddy that's willing to meet you and work together on it. And make some deep friendships. That's what's so nice about workshops like this. It's an opportunity that you can bond one-on-one with people who are struggling with the exact same thing. As women, we're all going through very similar circumstances. And so why are we joined or brought together so that we can encourage and uplift one another, isn't it? So make deep friendships with those who will be there and will be with you through difficult circumstances of life. Practice the positive character traits of adaptability, courtesy, and kindness. Have prayer partners and enjoy growing together spiritually. Choose to be faithful to God and remain pure and prudent in all circumstances. Do good. Throw yourself into a cause that's bigger than yourself. And then go to new places and meet new people. Take time to be a good steward of your income. Return to God, care for your immediate needs, and then save for emergencies and towards owning your own property if possible. Invest in others, and God will bless you. Resist wasting time idolizing in TV celebrities. Instead, develop a creative lifetime hobby to do on your spare time. Make friends and plan activities such as mission trips or projects. Enjoy God's creation. Share worship times. One research study found that the average child watches 7 hours of TV per day while he spends an average of 5 minutes a day with his dad and 20 minutes a day with his mom. Not only are teens and children spending much time on TV, but they are also an unbelievable amount on cell phones, right? And not always appropriate internet, movies, surfing, chat rooms, video games, and so forth. So people say, constant stimulation of the senses shuts down the analytical processes and ultimately shuts down the ability to face life rationally. This leads to escape techniques that involve withdrawal, apathy, and rejection of disciplined thinking when faced with difficult duties and decisions. So that's what television a lot of times is for us. We come home from a hard day of work, or you've had a hard day around the home, and you just don't want to think about your problems anymore. So we sit down and we turn on the television, and what do we do now? We take on someone else's problems, right? And so now, not only are we bearing our own, we're bearing theirs too. And, you know, sometimes we think that's relaxing, and that's, you know, I'm just too stressed. I need to relax in front of the television. But your body, even though your mind, you think, I know this isn't true. I know this isn't me. Your body doesn't know it. And you will physically go through all the different changes in your body the same way as if you were personally involved in that event. Did you realize that? And so this is pumping a stress hormone called cortisol through your bloodstream constantly and stressing us out more. So people say, well, what am I supposed to do? If I don't have television, there's nothing to do and everything's boring. Well, first we're saying that we're trying to fit everything in our day. And now we're told, well, if I give up TV, what am I going to do with my life, right? So I challenge you, pull the plug and see what happens. You can enjoy some physical activities, such as outdoor non-competitive exercises. You can grow a garden, participate in daily chores. Things a little slow here. Make home comfortable and serene. Help others, offer your service. Family values development, such as use mealtime, as we just talked about. Use it as a time of education, a time to share, to bond as that family. Daily devotions and Bible study, hymn singing, read together, pray together, discussion of spiritual values. And then, of course, visit nature sites, go camping, historical sites, attend concerts, listen to music. There's so many things you can do. Too often we run out of time before we finish running through our to-do list, don't we? If the day is already packed and you add something more, what are you willing to let go of? How can we use the 86,400 seconds of each day to bring balance into our family life and enhance relationships? Victoria was in a social gathering, holding a cup of hot tea ready to stir, when she suddenly spotted her strong 5-year-old nephew running straight for her. She knew what was coming next. Victoria had to brace herself, for a moment later, he grabbed her around the legs and squeezed tightly. He was just showing love, and he wanted a hug from his auntie. But her hands were full, so the only way Victoria could hug him back was to stop what she was doing. She had to put that cup of tea down on the counter, and then was able to return that embrace. What do you do when your hands are already full? And suddenly another important task comes your way. You're going to have to make that choice. Let go of something you're doing before embracing something even better. And what could something better be in your case? The essential? Perhaps giving God more time? Self-care of your own body? Perhaps meeting one of your teen's needs? Increasing knowledge? Doing good for others? The plate is so full, you're going to have to get rid of something. And that is a frontal lobe of the brain choice. Even when you're very busy a few minutes here and there during the day with a child, it can make a huge difference. 3 minutes listening, 8 minutes throwing the ball, 5 minutes cleaning up together after a meal, as a family. 5 minutes for family devotions. It all matters to your family. You know, sometimes we think, what are we so busy with? Well, Lord, I'm real busy with putting on programs for you, right? I'm really busy in the church. I have all these roles in the church. How can I keep up with all this? And you know, this is the way I had become. I had so many programs going. I was running myself ragged. And I thought, how can I say no? People would say to me, say no, just say no. And I'd say, but if the church is asking me, that means God's asking me. You're telling me I need to tell God no. Sorry, God, I'm busy right now. But you know what? I heard this song one time. And I remember it was after a very busy camp meeting. Some of you know me from cooking at camp. And after a long couple of weeks there, I was exhausted. And I bought this new CD from the ABC, and on our way home, we popped it in our van listening to it. And suddenly this song came on, and I just started to cry, and I said, "This is me." And the song was, "I Miss My Time With You." Have you heard of that? So here's God saying, "I miss my time with you. You're so busy trying to please me. But how can you please me when your spirit's empty?" And at that moment, I realized my spirit was empty. I was truly running around like a crazy woman trying to please God, when in reality, I was shutting the door on him. And so we have to look, because, you know, God doesn't want us doing that. It's one thing to work for the church, but we all need to pull together and carry our weight, that it's not a great burden on one person. And so we need to work together and realize God will work through us, but we still have to make that time for him. And so life is a juggling act. We often hear the complaint, "I've got too many balls in the air." Life in our time-strapped, chaotic world has become a juggling act, both at work and at home. And we've become good jugglers now, haven't we? And we'll all have to learn how to do it better. And we must decide, though, which balls need to be juggled. The biggest balancing act in combining all the factors, the body, mind, spirit, and relationship dimensions in real living. It can be a real juggle to keep five balls moving all at the same time. Synergy is an interesting word that means the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. George MacDonald, a famous English 19th century writer, claimed that one horse can pull 2 tons, but that 2 horses harnessed to work together can pull 23 tons. Isn't that amazing? So you see what I'm saying? We need to work together. Everyone carry the load that God has given you. Don't carry it all. And working together, we can succeed way further than if we didn't work together. The Bible says that you will chase your enemies. 5 of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. That's found in Leviticus. Notice the synergy principle at work. One dimension of life harmoniously interacts with other dimensions, and the result is powerfully connecting lifestyle. Sometimes we are prone to think we will be well if we take one step towards a healthy lifestyle. Maybe just eat right, or just exercise 1/2 hour a day. But is one enough for you? What would happen if we integrated all the other factors as well that we've mentioned? If we added not only a healthy diet, but moderate exercise, drinking our 6 to 8 glasses of water, getting our daily fresh air, sunshine, being positive, cultivating a life of hope, showing love, appreciation, being joyful, having positive relations with our family and our friends, it would be what we call a wow experience, wouldn't it? What a difference there will be. When you put to work family, health, personal fulfillment, and spiritual growth, together in one concert, the factors interact and you have multiplication instead of addition. There will be incredible beneficial synergy and a longer and happier life with less medical problems and less pills. So a vital habit that helps us with balancing our life is prayer. What about our prayer life? Do we only pray when we have time? In the balanced life, should time be allocated for a relationship with God? How about my prayer life? Do I only pray when I have the time? Do making a living pursuing entertainment, telephone chats, or time on the internet crowd out our personal time with God? So what plans can I make for spiritual growth? How can I order my day to make sure that my life is guided by God and seeking him through prayer? How does prayer make the day better, and what does God do to help us live a more balanced life? Remember, God has supernatural powers to help us. Hope is celebrating today the realities of a future dream. With hope, you can awaken to the dawn of a new day with optimism and a determination to make all your dreams come true. When we tell God about our hopes and our dreams, we can trust and we can have confidence that He will make the best things happen for us. And that'll give Him great joy. You know, we're living in uncertain times right now. Our economic situations, people losing jobs. In the U.S. especially, we hear of people losing their homes. There's a searching and a longing in this time of life, in this time of loss. It is time to speak hope to a hopeless world. We need to encourage each other. I need to encourage you, and you need to encourage me. Sometimes we are givers, and sometimes in life we are receivers. And that's okay. And that's what we need. You know, a lot of times we think we have to give, 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 and it's wrong to receive. But God has given those blessings to us. He's just waiting for us to willingly receive them. God is there to help us. John Donne said, "No man is an island." True, we all need each other. Research indicates that quality relationships demonstrate amazing results on coronary blockages, angina, and ulcers. And today, many are self-centered and don't hear the cry of others who are needing that helping hand. Mother Teresa stopped to help a dying woman on a sidewalk and ended up changing the world. Whether we are rich or poor, we can help others who are needier than we are. Mother Teresa, she had it right when she said the greatest disease is not TB or leprosy. It is being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for. Social support is actually the strongest factor that determines quality of life and longevity. So being connected is really the greatest benefit of all and brings with it the joy of the giver. What is God's plan for you? We need to return to the essentials, to the necessary, making time for God and ourselves. Beware, though, because the enemy of the soul wants to overburden us with stress and keep us extremely busy. Remember, Jesus says, "My burden is easy and my load is light." He has a plan for us. In closing, Barbara. Barbara worked with the same company for a decade, and although she had been promoted to upper management, she found the phone calls, the emails, the faxes, they were all dominating her life. And since she could only rest with sleep aids now at night, she pumped herself full of the caffeine during the day. She took 5 kinds of headache remedies and swallowed dozens of antacid pills to try to control her indigestion. And finally, her body said, "No more." When she planned a mini vacation, her body wouldn't even move. She was utterly exhausted, and after 48 hours of nonstop sleep, Barbara awakened and was scared. She managed to see a doctor who, after examining her, pronounced her the healthiest sick person he had ever seen. He said, "You are hyper-stress," and he wrote out a prescription saying, "Get a different job." Relinquishing the security of her upper management position took courage, but she chose to listen to her body. Barbara had faith that God would never fail her. She took that decisive step and turned in her resignation. She was then able to discover her true self, and she reconnected with her friends. Her 8-week sabbatical taught her that life without balance is really no life at all. A friend helped her interview for a low-stress job, and though her income was lower, she was now happy. Money was not important, but a balanced life was. She took charge of her life, and she returned to the essentials. How about you? What choices do you need to make? I remember seeing a doctor, and I was just forever stressed and all worked up at that point. And this doctor said to me, "You need to take time and do what you enjoy. What do you enjoy?" And that was such an eye-opening experience for me, because I could not think of one thing I enjoyed. I couldn't, for the life of me. He says, "Well, do you like to swim?" "I used to." "Do you enjoy cooking?" "I used to." "Do you enjoy sewing?" "I used to." I didn't enjoy anything anymore. I just did everything because I needed to. And at that moment, I realized, I don't even know who I am anymore. What do I enjoy? What do I like? What do I want to spend time on? So I want you to ask yourself that, because maybe you're struggling with the same. So each of us can experience balance, effective living 24/7 on a higher level. But it's our choice. It's your choice. It's my choice. The balanced living decision may call for planning, giving up the unimportant, but not giving up your big dreams. It is going forward even when you don't want to. It means focusing on the good, being content with what you have, but still striving for the best. Look ahead. Remember the tightrope walker. Look ahead, because where your eyes focus, you will go. Look ahead to victories with hope and optimism. And remember that challenges and crises that occasionally throw us off balance are incredible life-growing opportunities, which, believe it or not, can even be a blessing. Thank you. Let's just stand and have a word of prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you for making us who we are. And Lord, we want to have a balanced life. And we know that Satan is hard at work, especially in these last days, to busy our minds and keep us so focused on things that aren't always essential and important. And so, Lord, we ask that you will be with each and every one of us personally as we redesign our lives, as we put together what is important and reorganize and focusing on those items you'd have us to focus on. And we ask, God, that you'll give us the strength to do this, to overcome what is hurting us, and give us the encouragement to know that you're walking beside us all the way, and that you'll never leave us nor forsake us, and that we can cast all our burdens and worries upon you, and that you're willing to carry the load for us, and we thank you for that. And so, Lord, just be with us now as we go forward from this moment onwards, as we try and work towards our goal. May we never lose focus of it, and that is becoming more and more like you and bringing others to experience the love and joy that you provide in our lives. We thank you, Jesus, and we ask that you'll be with our families as well, wherever they may be. Give them a wonderful Sabbath blessing as well, Lord. And we thank you. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.